We may be coming to the end of festival season here in the UK, but we've saved one of the best till last with Wilderness Festival. If you ever dreamed of what a festival called Wilderness might be like, I think you'd probably get something very similar to the reality of Wilderness. It's held in Cornbury Park in Oxfordshire, and as you're entering the arena, you're greeted by a beautiful lake that you can swim in, surrounded by fairy lights. And as you head up the hill, you can see some of the wildest out of festival outfits. I mean, at Wilderness, anything goes, whether it be the usual glitter and sequins that you see at any festival, to wings and horns and such like. So nothing is off limits. On the Saturday, we spoke to Oxford natives Low Island before their set on the main stage. The band's music has been compared to LCD Sound System, Caribou State, and Radiohead. And we spoke to the vocalist and guitarist Carlos Posada, as well as drummer Felix Higginbottom, about their most recent singles. Low Island, how are you guys doing?
We are incredibly well, thank you very much.
Good. How was your set? How did you feel it went? You said that the opening headliners can be quite brutal. Do you think this time it was?
This time we feel like it was a winner. Sometimes the opening main stage slot is a tricky one because everyone's like hungover and sitting around reading the paper, having a kebab, but today felt like a good vibe, I think.
Yeah, really good. Really good.
There was a lot of energy, the crowd seemed to enjoy it, you know, so I think it went as well as it could have gone.
And a few local faces as well, because we're from around here as well.
Which is always...
can help. Sometimes. It did help today.
Yeah, so you being from Oxford, it must be great to play a venue in Oxford. Is there something about Oxford venues and places like that that you love more than anything else? Or
yeah, we like playing in Oxford because it's like, it's close to the studio, which is nice. Doesn't mean we have to travel very far. But also, yeah, I mean, there's more people who know us in the crowd, so we get a warmer reception probably when we play in Oxford, you know.
And also, it sort of makes sense because we've grown up around Oxford music. We've created this band as a result of sort of Oxford music and stuff, so playing in Oxford's great because everyone gets it. You know, they come from the same sort of pool, which is good. Mm.
And do you think the Oxford music scene has changed a lot over the years as you guys have been performing?
It's definitely changed in the last, like, 5 years. There was a period when we were growing up where there was Foals and it was really exciting and, you know, and then there was Stornoway as well, there was Glass Animals, and it just felt really, really exciting. And then there was a lull, I feel like it was 5 years, where things just went a bit, I don't know, it quietened down quite a bit. And now there's a new promoter working in Oxford and just, I don't know, it's come back on the circuit again and you're seeing bands coming through Oxford and it feels like an exciting place to be again. There was a period where it wasn't. I think that's all fair, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, there's another local band called Be Good, who personally, I mean, we're big fans of them. They've supported us at a lot of shows.
Yeah.
I think they're one of the best Oxford bands, you know, ever. So it's an exciting time.
Yeah.
So you've said with your different EPs and everything, all the music that you've released, that you've had different approaches to writing them and different locations. Like, there's one where you went away to this cottage and everything. Is location important to you guys when you're writing? Do you think it influences the songs?
I think definitely. I think it's... actually, it's a good question, because last week we recorded in London for the first time. We were in a studio all week in London, and that was a really different vibe, being in like a busy city, because usually we're either in our studio in the middle of nowhere in Oxford or we go to this other place to write. I can't tell whether the result is different, but it certainly feels different.
I think we don't seek them out knowing how it's going to affect you, but I think it always does. Like, for example, you know, that cottage that we've been to and we're going to keep going to sort of write music, it tends to somehow, there's sort of something in the air, something in the water that tends to affect what we make, but we never quite know how that's going to play out. But you look back at it and you're like, oh yeah, there's something going on there. And then having done it in London and stuff, it always has an effect. But we don't plan on it because we don't really know exactly how it works, but you definitely notice it.
Yeah.
And with your recent music, like Searchbox, I thought the concept behind that song was really interesting because obviously technology is improving all the time and it can be quite scary. Do you think it's getting to a point where it does more bad than good?
I mean Searchbox was a really fun song to do, because for me there's two sides to the googling thing. There's like everyone opening up a lot to this thing which is harvesting your data and obviously comes across as being quite maligned. I think that's like obvious to anyone, but then at the same time it also gives you a space to relieve yourself of shame, you know, and talk about things that maybe you wouldn't want to talk about with your friends or your family. Like the go-to example I always think about is the example of in India when you say, you type in, my husband wants me to, the first thing that comes up is breastfeed him. And I think that's a really interesting, because I'm sure that people fear, there's a sense of shame about asking that question or feeling like you're the only one who that's happening to and not wanting to talk about it with anyone. And then you go on the internet and you realise actually there's tons of people going through that. So I think that there's a lot of positive stuff that comes with it. But yes, of course, the good comes with the bad, you know?
And there's a funny thing as well that with sort of Instagram, as everyone keeps saying, it's a very sort of false presentation. People are only presenting their best life, their best days, their sort of them on holiday or them killing it or whatever. And so that's a sort of very uninsightful sort of look at how people are, because it's very presentational and you only want to show yourself winning, etc. And then Google's interesting because you type in questions and actually you get an insight into how sort of messed up, you know, the world is and people's thoughts are. So I find those two platforms kind of opposite. If you go on Google to find out how weird and sad and broken people are, you go on Instagram to sort of find out the opposite.
Yeah, it's like on Instagram someone will be like, you know, having a great holiday with this one, and then it's a picture of their wife or husband, and you know, aren't they
great?
You
know they're Googling.
And then they're Googling like, does my wife hate me? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Or, you know, is she a lesbian? It's like, you're not going to put that on your Instagram page. So I think it's a really interesting dichotomy between the two.
Can you marry your goldfish?
It's all very interesting questions. I'm sure Google will have the answer to, obviously.
Yes, we should Google it.
For sure. So speaking of social media, in person, if I'm guessing correctly, is about connection between people. And yeah, as we get older especially, and social media being a kind of medium for that as well, do you think music is an important part of connections we have between each other? And do you think we're losing that a bit because we have other ways to connect?
That's a really interesting question. I mean, yeah, Searchbox is definitely more about the sort of direct message, private social media, you know, just one-to-one, peer-to-peer conversations and stuff. And as you say, yeah, as you get older, it's harder to keep relationships and people flake out more and people get anxious and people's sort of network and group of friends sort of truncates into their 30s and stuff for whatever reason. So that's sort of about that phenomenon. But yeah, I think, you know, without sounding trite, music will always serve as a thing to bring people together. And I sort of think that's what, you know, that's what we're trying to do with the songs that we write, like Searchbox and like In Person. We're trying to write songs that actually all of the people we know and all the people that listen to the song go, I've felt like that, I feel like that, I'm frustrated that I'm losing touch with people I thought I really cared about, my mates from uni or whatever it was, and I'm 28 now and we don't see each other anymore. And you know, we're just trying to write songs that just tap into that and express it, you know, just want people in the crowd to go, oh yeah, while they're dancing as well, you know.
Certainly for us as well, like playing live and, you know, playing our songs and music live is still the most direct way of communicating with an audience. You know, like, it's very hard to know when you're looking at the Spotify figures what any of that stuff really means, or your Facebook or whatever. But when you play live, you know, it's a direct form of communication that you can actually measure, that is real. And I think, you know, that's not gonna, so I don't think that is gonna change. I hope it doesn't.
Later on in the festival, we spoke to Tom Grennan, a student radio favourite, and for a good reason. It's kind of hard to believe that with a voice like his, that he hasn't always known he can sing, because apparently it wasn't until the encouragement from his school friends that he took his talent seriously. In this interview, he talks a little bit about why he chose music over a possible career in football, as well as where he hopes his new album will go.
Before music, you were in football.
Yeah.
Like what you said before, like you were drawn a lot more towards music than football.
Yeah.
And that even playing like big stadiums,
yeah,
you'd rather do music.
Yeah.
What was it about music that drew you?
Just because I love it. I love the buzz of it. I love being on stage. I love people singing. I love people singing together. I think it's wicked.
But you get that at football stadiums.
Yeah, I know, but I just love music, man. Okay. Yeah.
Fair. And was there anyone specific that made you realise, actually, I want to do this?
Nah. My mate at school asked me to do this A-level piece for him, and I was like, nah. And I did it, and then it turned out to be all right.
I'm surprised you didn't know you could sing before that.
No.
Did you never, like, tried?
No.
Remember. So you released album one.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like putting that out there? Like, were you nervous? Did you feel like you got this reception that you thought you would for certain songs?
I think it was because my first album, I wasn't nervous. I just wanted to get it out and get music out, really. But I'm just excited to get this next one out.
Yeah, so in February you said you had about like 35 songs written down. How do you like whittle it down to the amount of songs? Do you have a
just cherry picking, really? We all sit together and figure out what the best songs are and what aren't. So, but who's to know what a good song is anymore? Do you know what I mean? So,
true.
I don't know, man.
But would you say there's like? So I was having this argument with a friend that they said that if music is good, then it's good, and everyone kind of knows. Like, no. Someone will know if it's good.
Yeah, but also there's a lot of shit music, and people think it's good.
But,
so who's to know?
Could that be your opinion, though?
Well, it is my opinion.
Yeah.
But I think that's a lot of people's opinions, too.
Okay,
yeah.
Fair enough. What is different about the music that you're putting out next? Do you think you want to make it epic?
Yeah.
In what way is it epic?
I don't know yet, because I haven't found a producer. So, I know the songs are good,
mm-hmm.
but I just need to find a producer to make them songs sound epic and stuff. But I don't know which direction I'm going in or whatever yet, so not too sure.
All right. Well, thanks for speaking to me.
Thank you so much.
Nice
our
student radio, you get a lot of love.
Nice one, so big up the student radio.
Yeah.
Sustainability is a big topic of discussion in a world where we're becoming more conscious of how much we waste and what kind of waste we're producing. Tom Hodgkinson's mentioned in his interview about how being idle can reduce our impact on the environment. But there are many ways to do this in all areas of life. One area that's potentially forgotten about is fashion. I, for one, didn't know that it takes 2,700 litres of water to make one cotton t-shirt. And since fashion is such a huge part of festival culture, I think this is an area that shouldn't be ignored. So at the festival, to host a fashion panel and impart her wisdom on the topic of sustainable fashion, CEO of Fashion Roundtable, Tamara Chinchik, spoke to us about how we can all make a difference.
So we're here today at Wilderness Festival. We've just had the Fashion Roundtable. I'm here with the CEO of Fashion Roundtable, and I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit about what Fashion Roundtable is and what it aims to do.
Thank you. So Fashion Roundtable is the secretariat for the all-party parliamentary group for textiles and fashion. We're also taking on co-secretariat duties for the ethics and sustainability in fashion APPGs, which is what they're called. We do events. We also work on policy advocacy. And on the other side of the business, we also do consultancy.
I found that when in the conversation about environmental issues, a lot of the focus is not on fashion, I think it's more on food, for example, like veganism. Do you think we can maybe turn the conversation more towards fashion?
I think it's about awareness. So amongst politicians, for instance, until we started, they hadn't discussed fashion in the House of Commons, in the Chamber, for 3 years, but they had, up to Brexit, they had discussed Game of Thrones 6 times in 18 months. And Game of Thrones obviously is a fantasy programme, and fashion is a £32.3 billion industry for the UK economy. And fishing, for instance, which has been mentioned all the time in the Brexit conversation, makes £1.4 billion GVA, which is the same as East London alone from fashion. So it's about knowing the value, knowing that how many people, it's almost 1 million work in the industry in the UK alone, and therefore the value that it brings to the economy, but also the issues that are around it. And sustainability as well as inclusion and representation are obviously core to that conversation to make it be a progressive sector going forwards, whether we leave the EU or not.
So fashion is obviously a big part of Wilderness Festival. If you look around and you see so many amazing outfits and there's so many things being sold fashion-wise. Do you think that there's something that maybe festivals can do to make sure that fashion is sustainable?
I think they need to look at their curation. I think that they could think about how they're curating the brands that they're working with, rather than possibly just looking, I don't know because I haven't been involved, but maybe bringing in people like us to look at the curation of the brands that they're bringing in, to make sure that they're leading in those conversations rather than following. Because as somebody raised in our event, you know, talking about sustainability and then having people in plastic sequins is not carrying that conversation forwards. If you lead the consumer choice, because ultimately your festival goers are essentially consumers for that weekend, most of them aren't leaving, they're with you, and you could get them from dawn till dawn on Friday till dawn on Monday, really engaging 360 in a conversation that you're leading, and that would be, I think, transformative for these people. So the Greenfield, for instance, I was talking to a blacksmith who lives off grid, you know, he's made his dwelling, he works with shire horses, and just that 10-minute conversation with him was really evocative for me, powerful. And I think that there are people here within who are definitely flame bearers for different areas, whether, you know, because his life is essentially sustainable, but I think that our consumption, whether that's the food we're eating or the clothes we're wearing, you could, you know, Wilderness could definitely perhaps work with Fashion Roundtable at leading a curation that was definitely leading in those conversations.
Okay, and final question, what is it about Wilderness specifically, but also just festivals, that makes you want to come and talk about fashion?
Because we weren't in the room. We weren't in the room in Parliament. We've not been in the room with any authenticity at festivals. I come from a festival-going background. I used to have a stall at Glastonbury back in the 90s. I worked many festivals, WOMAD, etc., with a vegan chai shop with my ex-boyfriend. So it's not unusual to me. I'm an ex-raver, so it's part of my culture. And I think many people of my generation are the, like, grandparents of this kind of way of living, and we are, it's not unusual for us, it's normal for us. I was going to festivals with my son as a baby because I had clients as a stylist who were singing at festivals. You know, I went to the Green Man with Bat for Lashes, who was my client for many years. So it's not unusual to me, it's normal. So bringing our conversation out of the echo chambers, either of Parliament or of fashion, the fashion community, was part of what we want to break down echo chambers, because otherwise it just seems like it's just catwalk and out of reach, and therefore it isn't what everybody's wearing. No one's walking around nude, and we're not joining the dots, because what we're eating is just as important as what we're wearing. So it's about making people not feel targeted or vulnerable, but understanding that it's to be valued, which is at the core of what we do.
One of the biggest topics on everyone's mind right now is climate change. As we've been warned by the UN that we only have 12 years to fix the issues of climate change that we're facing. Another tent is perched right next to the clubhouse, which is a place where you can play cricket among many other sports. Is a tent dedicated to Extinction Rebellion, and in their own words, they are an international movement dedicated to using non-violent civil disobedience in an attempt to halt mass extinction and to minimise the risk of social collapse. But unlike many activist groups, they have a theory of change for how to achieve their goals. I attended a brief taster of their non-violent direct action training, and I spoke to one of the organisers of the training workshop about their role at Wilderness Festival. Here's the interview.
My name's Mina Jaff. Extinction Rebellion is a non-violent civil disobedience organisation. Started in about roughly October. We had our declaration of rebellion, and since then we've, you know, declared a rebellion against the government for its failure to act on the climate emergency that's facing us. We've blocked bridges in London. We had an occupation that lasted over 2 weeks in London back in April, and we're kind of ramping up things until we get what we want, which is the government to tell the truth about the climate emergency, and then to act by becoming carbon neutral, and then actually restore democracy to Britain by creating a citizens' assembly so that we can actually all inform this process. That's essentially what we are.
It might be hard to imagine, but if somebody's completely new to the idea of this climate emergency, what's kind of the first things you would recommend them do?
So the IPCC gave us last year gave us 12 years left to go completely carbon neutral, or lock in millions of years worth of climate breakdown. So that basically means that people always tend to want to condense it into global warming and be like, oh, the temperatures are getting warmer. That's not true. The temperatures are getting more erratic. So we're getting sea levels rising. We're getting, we've already locked in 2-degree temperature increase, which is enough to spell disaster. We've got the Arctic ice melting, and basically there's something called feedback loops, which is kind of like a domino effect, that when one breaks, loads of other things break. So the easiest example is Arctic ice melting. Arctic ice reflects the sun's rays, so when it's disappeared, the sun's rays intensify, the oceans heat up, which triggers sea levels, which triggers more storms, which triggers this, and it's this domino effect. And we're at the basically at the very like precipice of kicking off so many of these feedback loops, and the moment they start, we're done. Like there's nothing we can do. So that's essentially what this climate emergency is about. It's about stopping that tipping point from going any further, and we roughly have about between 2 and 11 years to do that, which is quite worrying, really.
Yeah, it's definitely a worrying thing. Like, it's, you know, I've personally noticed the extreme, you know, weather, even just in the UK.
Oh, yeah, we've had the hottest summers on record every year, and the warmest winters, and people have started to notice it, but it's something that really needs to be... It needs to be main news every day. We need to stop this idea that, okay, we've got a sunny day, we need to stop thinking, oh, like, lucky us for having a lovely, warm British summer, and actually thinking, oh, no, wait, this is the sign of something more to come. If it's been the hottest summer on record every year, what's it going to be like in 5 years' time? Or what's it going to be by 2050 when London is expected to be the same temperature as Barcelona?
What is it about Wilderness Festival that made you want to come here as an organisation and speak to people?
XR has been going around a number of festivals this summer. Festivals we find are a really amazing place to do outreach. They tend to be quite creative, and they tend to be an atmosphere where people are willing to engage. And also the nice thing about festivals is each festival tends to have a specific vibe and a specific dynamic, and you can reach different audiences that you might not be able to reach when you're, you know, in your local groups or walking around the streets of London or wherever you are in the UK. So Wilderness is a good example. It's reaching an entire dynamic of people that we don't usually engage with, and that's a really positive thing to see.
Well, that's just a small taster of what you might experience if you come to Wilderness Festival. If you're into great music, thought-provoking talks, and incredibly tasting food, I mean, there really is probably the best food that I've ever had at a festival if you come to Wilderness, honestly. Unfortunately, I couldn't interview the food, but if you're interested in any of those things, even swimming, then you'll love Wilderness Festival. I've certainly enjoyed it, the festival. I've enjoyed the festival season, and it's gone out with a bang with Wilderness, and hopefully next year some of you will join me.